Greetings to the crew of the Gaia Navigation Experiment and anyone else who cares to listen. This is your navigator, John Lash. I'm speaking to you on March 6th, 2012. And I'm taking a special occasion now to record a talk intimately related to our practice in the Navigation Experiment. The title I give to this talk is The Virgin Womb of Mutation. As applies to all the talks that come forth in the course of this experiment from March 2011 to March 2014, the topics discussed are closely time-factored. And so I'm talking about events that are happening now or due to happen very soon, events unfolding in real time. And that is how the experiment works. At the same time, even though these talks address directly the imminent course of events at the moment I make them, they remain as a living chronicle of our experiment. And they have a value now of a certain kind for those of us who are tracking Sophia's correction in real time. For those who listen to them at some later time, be it months or years from now, they have a different and equally important value, a value of the recording of the journey that we took during this precious and extraordinary interval of human life on Earth, the 3 years, the 10 seconds, when Sophia sets the initial conditions for her correction. So don't be put off if sometime in the future you're listening to this talk and you think that the subject matter and the points I'm making could be périmé, what do they say in French? I don't know how to say it in English anymore. Have outlasted their pull date. This information cannot be rendered obsolete. You simply take it on in real time, or you take it on later as a chronicle of a practice, of a unique and powerful practice that was undertaken in real time. And either way, there is much to be learned from these lessons. The specific purpose of this talk, The Virgin Womb of Mutation, is to address the event that is unfolding, the event that is due to happen this month, March 2012, on the 10th of this month. There is a perigee surge in the constellation of the Virgin. It is located at 17 degrees of the sign Libra in the astrological scale, which is 197 degrees on the ecliptic. And this location where the perigee of the moon, where the moon at that moment passes through its perigee, is in the womb of the Virgin, in the middle part of her torso. Roughly speaking, we divide the Virgin, the constellation of the Virgin, into three parts: the upper torso, the middle, and the lower torso, which would be the knees, and her hand, which is down by her knees because she's kneeling with her left hand, palm open, held by her knees. So that's the visualization we use for the Virgin. And the purpose of this talk is to address just before it happens, exactly what to anticipate with this perigee surge of March 10th. For once, I'm a little bit ahead of the game here. Those of you in the practice will know by now that these apogee and perigee surges come at us very fast. It seems like an ample amount of time. They're roughly timed 2 weeks apart. It seems like an ample amount of time to have to get ready for something, 2 weeks. But as a matter of fact, when we're in Gayan time and when we're living with the dynamics of the planet itself, it changes our sense of time and it really speeds things up. Bear in mind, I've said that 108 days of our time is just 1 second of her time. And as we learn to live more consciously and intentionally in her time, things speed up. So when I introduced the Gaia navigation experiment, you might recall that I used the analogy of a tiller. And I said that the barycenter mechanism of the Earth-Moon system is the tiller of the mothership. It is the wheel in the wheelhouse. But it's not shaped, it ought not to be envisioned like the round wheel of a sailboat or a yacht, but rather to be envisioned like the pair of handles that one uses in a video game, or like the steering wheel of a racing car. Steering wheel of a racing car is not a circle as it is with an ordinary car, but it is a bar with two handles. So the barycenter steerage mechanism of the Earth-Moon system is like this, but it's very odd because it's longer on one side than it is on the other. So the short end of the steering control yoke, as it's called, represents the perigee, the position of the moon closest to the Earth, and the longer end of the control yoke, which steers the mothership, is the apogee, representing the point when the moon is most distant from the Earth. And you recall at the beginning when I introduced this analogy, which I think is still a useful analogy, that I said that you should put yourself, insert yourself there. Imagine that you are the pilot, or that you are the helmsman anyway. You're not the captain and you're not the navigator, but you're the helmsman. So as the helmsman, you're standing with your legs apart, braced, and you have your body sort of locked onto the vertical column that comes up from the mothership that is attached to the rudder, which is front-mounted on the mothership. And you're holding yourself vertical, locked to that column, and in your right hand you have the handle of the apogee, and in your left hand the handle of the perigee. And by swinging those back and forth, you steer the mothership. Well, getting back to the factor of timing, I think it becomes obvious when you've been in this experiment for a few months that these turns that are made in the steerage, these turns that are made as we turn into the apogee curve and into the perigee curve and into the apogee curve, although they're positioned at intervals 2 weeks apart, they seem to come really, really fast. No sooner do you pull out of an apogee curve, that is to say, you've curved the steering mechanism around with your right hand, you've steered it around. No sooner do you, and then you pull it back so that the two handles are balanced equally on either side of your body. And no sooner do you do that than, whoops, you're going into the perigee surge and you're moving the handle on the left forward, you see? And it's really like being in racer cars or bumper cars. I mean, there's a velocity of it that is startling. And if you are actually feeling that velocity, and if you're having a sense, as I do, believe me, that I can barely keep up with the rhythm of these apogee and perigee moments, then you are actually in the experiment and you are actually being engaged. Your sense of time and your metabolism and your mind and body are being engaged in the way that she operates. And so I have not always been able to report on apogee and perigee surges. Sometimes I've just had to let them go by without reporting. And sometimes I report on them at the very last minute or then just a few days after. So on this occasion, I'm taking the opportunity to orient you to a perigee surge about 3 days before it comes on. Today's the 6th of March. It comes on the 10th of March. Now, what is the particular significance of this upcoming perigee surge? Well, let's recall that throughout this second year of correction that we're now entering, from January, the beginning of, from November in 2011 and through to January, we're tracking the shift of the lunar perigee through the Virgin and down into the scales, and then eventually into the Scorpion. This is the general area of movement of the perigee of the moon through the end of 2011 and all through the year 2012. In doing so, we noticed a remarkable pattern. Recall that the perigee of the moon does not behave like the apogee of the moon, which is relatively steady. The apogee of the moon is not entirely steady. It does stall at times and slightly regress backwards. But in general, it advances ahead through the constellations, that is to say, in the natural order of the zodiac, fishes, ram, bull, twins, and so forth. The activity of the lunar perigee is quite different. It advances by jerks and starts, and then at certain times it reverses its course and goes back and repeats and revisits previous positions. This is a basic fact of astronomy, a basic fact of the celestial mechanics, if you will, evident in the barycenter mechanism. When we take this on board, it's a simple factor of astronomy that we learn, nothing mysterious or particularly complex about it. But it alerts us to watch carefully these variations and fluctuations in the lunar perigee. So we noted last year that in November, on November, Nikita's sitting right on the chart, here it is, November 23rd, there was a hit of the lunar perigee in 14 Scorpio, which is in the scales. And then on December 25th, in the scales, and that was in the right and left pans of the scales, respectively. And then on January 17th, the lunar perigee reversed again, and it went back to 16 Scorpio, which is in the right pan. So we had two hits in the right pan, one in the left, during this period of time. And now, part of our exercise with tracking the correction of the Divine Sophia is to look and see where these astronomical phenomena might be reflected in current events and in the way that the collective psyche is playing out its drama right now, the breakdown of the whole collective psyche, the breakdown of society at large. We want to look to those events in the large theater of human activities, in the social theater, and ask ourselves from time to time, is there any correlation? Is there a simultaneity? And we did observe a most remarkable correlation. It's true that the global economic system has been in chaos and ready to break down for quite a number of years now, but it was remarkable that in November of last year, and then in December, there were events in the financial sphere that were critical to the breakdown. And they happened timed very closely to these hits in the right pan of the scales, which represents commodities, and in the left pan of the scales, which represents the currencies that are used to distribute, to value and distribute commodities. So in the scales, we have an image of the world economy, and remarkably, very decisive events in the breakdown of the world economy were timed to these perigee surges. Additionally, the scales is an image of justice, of the justice system, the injustice system, as I prefer to call it. One of the things we've learned, some of us have learned by doing our homework since 9/11, is that the entire system of social organization on this planet is rigged by banksters and crooks and a financial mafia. And they are in cahoots with the legal system, which is also rigged. So the rigged system is coming down, and we can see events concerning the legal systems of the world and events concerning the economic systems closely correlated to these perigee surges in the scales. The event that occurred, in November, closely connected to the hits in the scales, was this so-called trillion-dollar lawsuit that's being brought by the Dragon family. And there has been even more talk now. There's Lord Blackheath of the House of Lords in England has brought out the case of a scandal of a $15 trillion scandal perpetrated by the Bank of England and so forth and so on. Personally, I don't believe that the reform of the that the defeat of the predators and the reform of our system can be done by these court cases. But they do bring a lot of attention to what's wrong, and they do get a lot of interest in the public sphere and are even being picked up now by the mainstream media. So in a general introductory sense, that is what we were looking for as we saw the perigee make its initial dash into the constellation of the scales. Now, however, wow, now, after that, after January 17th, when it hit, again, the second hit in the right pan of the scales, another type of progression kicked in. We observe from a study of the lunar perigee that there would be three moments when it would drop back from the scales and revisit the constellation of the Virgin before it then surged ahead and made its final pass through the scales. This is extremely interesting phenomena, and we watch it in very close detail. Specifically, here is the timing and location of these three events. February 11th, lunar perigee in 13 Libra, which is in the upper torso of the Virgin, the thymus, let's say. March 10th, coming up in 4 days, 17 Libra, not too far away, but down into the middle torso of the Virgin. I would associate it with her womb. And April 7th, coming up in just a month, lunar perigee in 1 Scorpio, which is at the knees of the Virgin. So we have upper chest, womb, and knees. Very, very graphic, very distinct picture is being shown here. How then do we use this picture to chart what the Aeon Sophia is doing to us in the course of setting the initial conditions of correction? Well, let's bear in mind that to follow correction and to observe her story closely, we use the leitmotif of divine alchemy. Tracking the lunar perigee shows us the operations of divine alchemy performed by the wisdom goddess herself upon the human species, and indeed upon all living and animate life in the biosphere, from the molecular level up through all the other kingdoms of the insects, the plants, the snakes, the birds, the larger animals, until the human species. All of the species in the ten-tier experiment of the divine Sophia are being impacted by divine alchemy through the way that the planetary animal mother applies the powers of her first attention. On the other hand, when we look at the lunar apogee, the leitmotif is divine memory. And there we see how she is recapitulating her own cosmic adventure from the very first moment that she dreamed our experiment in the Pleroma, and tracking the moments of her recall and the content of her recall by the motion of the lunar apogee. So this is how the experiment works, and it is indeed a grand and beautiful, sublime, wonderfully imaginative method. Now, I'd have you recall that in my talks with Thomas on Grokta Talk, we were heading into a new series on love, war, and Gaianica sorcery, and I got caught in the rush of the dreaming attention around February 11th, right at the time of this first of these three perigee hits in the Virgin. And I was so thrown into the rush of the dreaming attention at that time that I had to bring up a couple of subjects, a couple of themes that were not necessarily in the course of those talks. So I talked about the carnal embrace of the Anthropos, and then I talked later on about Mantis, the bizarre, gigantic creature trapped inside a citrine geode at the center of the earth. That creature being the concrete manifestation of Sophia's terror, the terror that she felt at a certain point of her metamorphosis into the earth, that is to say, of the precipitation of her pure pleromic organic light into the material elements of the earth, right down to the inorganic core of the earth, which is very, very small, by the way. It's like the seed, the hard, small seed hidden inside a very thick fruit. So I discussed these matters because I was in the state of the Nahual, which means basically that which is not to be restrained. And I felt a huge urgency to bring these matters forth to the world at that time. Now, particularly the matter of the carnal embrace of the Anthropos. Let's go back and look at that for a moment. When I was investigating the Mantis situation, and when I was bracing myself for the perigee surge of February 11th, I found myself plunged into a startling realization. It was at that moment that I realized not only the dangerous stimulation posed by the screeches of Mantis, the dangerous stimulation that produces upon psychopaths and predators because of the way it irritates the nexus of the spinal and cranial nerves at the back of the head. And so I knew that we're entering a very dangerous moment. I saw this. And in my practice of telestic shamanism, that is an ecstatic visionary trance of learning, a learning trance, I also saw that the planetary animal mother was accomplishing a specific feat on February 11th by the perigee hit in the upper part of the Virgin. Let's recall that the Virgin is not just an image of the goddess herself. If you want to read it that way, you can. The Divine Virgin, Isis Sophia, displayed in the constellation of Virgo. But it is more particularly the design of the human body. It is the design, it can be regarded as the design of our own anatomical, neurochemical, and metabolic functions. And it can be read in that way. All the constellations can be read in a number of ways, and they have a great deal to teach us about physiology and different parts of the body. That is why we have inherited from medieval times the system that goes back to the mysteries, in which the different parts of the body are correlated to the various astrological signs, the thighs to Sagittarius, the heart and circulation to Leo, and so forth. Very profound knowledge in there that was routinely used in the mystery schools. So I realized that this hit in the upper part of the Virgin indicated that there is a wave, a massive wave, coming across the earth now, a massive wave of energies, of forces, of various kinds. Some of it is coming from the interior of the earth, from Mantis herself, it's a female Mantis, and some of it is coming from the sun in these coronal mass emissions. And the overall effect, from within and without, is that all living species on the planet are subjected to something like an electric jolt, something like the shock that you would get if you put your finger into an electrical plug. To an electrical outlet. And in view of this tremendous assault of heightened electromagnetic waves combined with ELF waves from the center of the Earth, combined with who knows what else. I mean, gamma bursts from various constellations are extremely prominent right now. In the face of this barrage, the planetary animal mother devised, in her first attention, a way to allow us to deal with it. And that is that she effectuated a strike on February 11th to super-stimulate the reticulation of myelin. So myelin is the gummy-like substance compared to lecithin, which does in fact nurture and repair myelin. It's the gummy-like substance that insulates your nerves. So the whole autonomic nervous system, the sympathetic and parasympathetic both, but in somewhat different ways, are insulated as wire is insulated by a plastic coating. And what the Aeon Sophia is doing in the Divine Alchemy of February 11th is to mutate us by amping up the reticulation of myelin so that we have spiraling layers of myelin being laid into our nervous systems by her influence in order to cushion us against the barrage of these electromagnetic, solar, plasmic, and ELF wave eruptions. And I explained that at some length, and I explained that the carnal embrace is a ritual in which we as human beings can enhance and receive the divine alchemy she is conducting upon us. Be it clear that the carnal embrace, that is to say, to lay in another person's arms, to lie in someone else's arms and just hold each other while you are concentrating in a relaxed way upon the sensation of surrender, the sensation that your myelin is being replicated and reticulated at a very high rate. That exercise came to me out of pure improvisation at the moment that I saw what she was doing. So at the moment that my telestic awareness allowed me to plot the dynamic effects of the February 11th hit, I immediately saw that ritual. And this is how rituals can be invented. They're not invented or contrived in any way. They come spontaneously as an adaptation to the events of the moment, as it were. So I propose this ritual. Now what I'm going to propose, as we move toward the second hit of March 10th, lower down in the torso of the Virgin, is that a second ritual will be appropriate. There is most likely to be a second ritual involved with receiving the March 10th hit, and then again, in April 7th, a third ritual. That would make sense to me. I think that would be consistent. So by the time we go through these three hits and the perigee then moves on and returns to the right pan of the scales on May 6th, thereafter not to reverse itself again into the Virgin, by the time we live through these 2 or 3 months, it would be wise to augment our practice by having three rituals to use. And each of these three rituals is distinctly addressed to each of those three hits. Now I'm going to suggest now what the second ritual will address. I don't know what the second ritual will be. How would I know? How would you know? How would anyone know? It will present itself spontaneously out of the event, when that event happens in real time, on March 10th. But for right now, I'm taking this unique opportunity to get a jump on the process. So the purpose of the remainder of this talk is to prepare you in the correct sense of anticipation and to prepare myself for what's coming with the March 10th hit. Now, something that I've experienced in my lifetime has been a strong, emotionally a strong issue for me. I've experienced a huge, huge disappointment throughout my life. And some of you may relate to this. The disappointment is regarding science. When I was young, I was very interested in science. I studied astronomy, Fred Hoyle's Frontiers of Astronomy. And I wanted to understand science. I wanted to understand Einstein and relativity and Heisenberg's theory of uncertainty and Bohm and Niels Bohr and quantum theory and all these things. But I wanted to understand them from the viewpoint of how they had evolved from earlier science. So I made many attempts to go back and track forward from like the Middle Ages through the Enlightenment to the 18th and 19th centuries to try to see what was behind. And I had these two books called The Rise of the New Science, two volumes by an author called Dabro, D'Abro. And it traced this trajectory, and I can't tell you how many times I read those damn books, trying to get my mind around it, and I never could. And the reason why I never could was because what I didn't know at that time in my naivete was that science has completely failed us. It has failed to be science, and this has been the case for a very long time. And so I'm incredibly disappointed in almost all the sciences, astronomy, especially physics, atomic physics, astrophysics, biochemistry. All of these sciences are corrupt. They have failed to deliver. They have failed to be what they ought to be, and it's a huge disappointment to me. But it's good to know that they have failed and that we don't need to rely on them and that we can strike out on a new path now. I am certainly convinced, my friends, that during these 3 years of the correction of the divine Sophia, the initial conditions of her correction, that the initial conditions of entirely new sciences will be established and defined. One of them is plasma cosmology. Of course, they're not doing too well yet. I'm afraid they're having some false starts and they're stumbling and groping around rather badly. But if plasma cosmology and the electric universe theory, EUT, can be set up in the right initial conditions, it opens the portal to a vast new science. And all the old science, the rotten and corrupted science, the fake science, the rigged science, of Einstein and Planck, string theory, all this ridiculous nonsense about 97 elementary particles, all of this falls by the wayside. It belongs to the obsolete infrastructure and to the fraudulence of our way of viewing the cosmos, and it has to go. And so I'm hopeful that a new science can emerge, and I would like to make my contribution to that new science right now. Here is my contribution to the new science of biology / biochemistry. I maintain, consistent with the triple veil of Isis, as it was described in the mysteries, that all the processes of nature upon this planet can be understood in terms of three simple concepts. Three simple processes of natural order, or dynamic natural order, as I would call it. Or to use the Goethean term, three modalities of morphology. These are three morphological concepts. And they are, although the names are a bit awkward, perhaps we can come up with nicknames for them. The concepts themselves are blood simple, and they are verifiable by direct experience. There's nothing theoretical about them. So, what is the triple veil of Isis? What are the three dynamic morphological processes by which the divine Sophia manifests and sustains life on this planet? They are reticulation, metabolism, and articulation. These three processes are enough in themselves to be the foundation of a new biochemistry and a new biology. They are enough. For biology, of course, we would have to add the perspective of the 10-tier system to get a full picture of the complexity and beauty of symbiosis in the Gaian habitat. But if we want to understand things dynamically and morphologically, as Goethe attempted to do, then these three concepts, these three themes are adequate. And it's my pleasure to demonstrate to you right now how that is so. Do you want to know what is reticulation, metabolism, and articulation? Well, let's go out and stand somewhere in nature on the ground with bare feet in front of a tree. Let's say this tree is a Japanese maple. It's not a very big tree. See, it has a trunk about as thick maybe as a large cylinder, and then it's maybe 20 feet high or 15 feet high with its beautiful branches and leaves. It's a Japanese maple. Or if it was a Japanese cherry tree, a sakura, it would have leaves and flowers and it would have cherries on it. So looking at a tree, reticulation, metabolism, articulation. Everything that produces this tree from nature, from its seed form, everything that produces the seed of the tree, everything that maintains the growth of the tree, the rising of the sap, the pushing out of the leaves, the fruiting and the flowering, the spreading of the limbs, all of it is done in three dynamical events. First event is reticulation. How do you see reticulation looking at the tree in front of you? The reticulation of the tree is its bark, is its sheathing. Reticulation means sheathing. As a matter of fact, sheathing is a tremendously important aspect of the whole cosmic process. The reason why life could appear here on Earth or on any planetary setting, the reason why life can emerge in any planetary laboratory, is because propagules of life, seeds of life, have been delivered to that laboratory in streaming filaments of plasma, which are reticulated filaments of plasma. So in order for a propagule of life, a seed of a sentient species such as our own or any other animal species, to emerge on a planet, it is brought to the planet in a filament, a reticulated filament of plasma. So even at that cosmic level, there is reticulation. So what is the reticulation of the Japanese maple in front of you? Well, the reticulation process is the formation of the bark of the tree that defines the form of the tree. And we know from cutting trees, if we look at the shape of the cut, we see these concentric circles. And we know that that tells us how many years the tree has lived, because each year it adds another layer of bark and it expands. So that is reticulation. Reticulation is the formation of a protective sheath. And reticulation is evident everywhere in the natural world in various forms. I have a marvelous diagram, which is on the desktop of my other Mac here. I'm going to pull it up right now. And this shows the reticulation of the axon and the dendron of your neural nerves. And it looks just exactly like a tree. And, of course, dendron, dendrite, is taken from the Greek word meaning tree. So what you find in your brain is a process of reticulation. There is a membrane that surrounds your neural nerve, that surrounds the synapse and protects the synapse. And that membrane is just like the bark of a tree. And then there are microtubules inside this membrane, and each of those is a graduated form of reticulation within the overall reticulation of the membrane that encloses the neural nerve. DNA itself is held together structurally by microtubules, which were known to ancient yogis as nadis, N-A-D-I-S. And they said that there were 72,000 of these nadis in the human body, which is just an archetypal number of saying that there is a cosmic structure of microtubules at the molecular level, and that is reticulation. So you see reticulation when you look at many phenomena of nature. Now I'm going to skip metabolism for a second. I'm going to jump to articulation. Now, what is articulation? Well, standing in front of the Japanese maple, and you see the trunk coming up from the ground. The trunk just goes into the ground, and then what is beneath the part of the trunk that goes into the ground is hidden by the ground, obviously. Then the tree comes up, and it spreads into limbs, and these limbs spread into twigs, and these twigs produce leaves and flowers and fruit in some cases. This is articulation. The form, the dynamic morphology by which the divine Sophia immanently sustains the growth of plants is articulation. That's our process of constant articulation. I emphasize to you again, I spoke of this point before when I described Kundry and I sitting at a restaurant on a beach near Estepona, watching the waves come in to hit the shore. We realized that the waves just don't come in automatically. She brings each one in. Likewise, you're standing in front of the maple tree, and the divine Sophia, who is dreaming this planet and sustaining it by her dreaming, keeps the tree in a state of articulation by her dreaming. If she were to withdraw her dreaming, the tree would wither and just fall apart. It would fall over. It would lose everything. It would wither like a punctured balloon. So her dreaming is like the inflation that keeps everything alive and thriving and growing. That's articulation. And when we look down at the trunk of the tree, we realize, what is there beneath the earth? Well, there is another kind of articulation. It's the articulation of the root system. So both within the earth and in the atmosphere above the surface of the earth, she is constantly articulating. And as she articulates, she reticulates, because the articulated branches of a tree or the articulated parts of your body or of any organism need to be ensheathed in order for them to maintain their integrity. Otherwise, we would spill out of our skin and no morphological form would be able to retain its own inherent plan. So that's articulation. And articulation, of course, has what might be called a kind of hierarchical activity. I don't like that word so much. It has a graduated activity. The articulation of the branches from the trunk is one level. The articulation of the subsequent branches from the branches, another level. The articulation of the leaves on those branches, another level. The articulation of the flowers on those leaves, another level. The articulation of the fruit from those flowers, another level. That is all the articulation of the Japanese maple. Layer upon layer of articulation. And we know now from many close and detailed studies of nature that articulation unfolds in fractal modalities, that all the articulations of nature are fractally developing all the time, that they are fractally nested in each other. So the articulation of the branches of the tree is repeated in the articulation of the twigs on the branches. That is the articulation of the veins of the leaves is repeated. The leaves are flat reticulations. A leaf is a flattened reticulation. It's like a flattened cell membrane, a very thin one. And the veins of the leaves are fractally repeating the articulation of the branches of the tree, which are fractally repeating the articulations of all of the trees in the forest. So we know that it is an absolutely fractal beauty of infinite internesting and escalating degrees of articulation. We, as animals, are articulated primarily according to the model that she chose from. This is an off-the-shelf model that Pleuromic Aeons use. That is the pentagramic or five-form creature, five-limbed creature. So we have four limbs and a head. And this pentagramic form is our articulation. So my arms coming out of my torso is the process of her articulation. My fingers coming out of my hand is an articulation of the articulation of my arm and hand, and so forth and so on. So that's articulation. You can see it everywhere. Inside the body, the reticulation action of the goddess, which I have to again emphasize, is imminent. It's imminently sustained all the time. It doesn't operate automatically. There's nothing automatic in nature. Automatism belongs to constructions and machines and devices that human beings can make. For instance, I can make an automatic device, a clever device that will allow water from a well to pour down some kind of trough and into a cup. And then when it fills, that cup turns over and pours the water, distributes the water somewhere else. I can make all kinds of devices like that, from simple farm equipment of that sort to combustion engines and so forth. And those are all human constructs that operate automatically, but nothing in nature is automatic. So if your liver is functioning right now, it's because she is imminently allowing it to do so. On bodily organs, such as the liver, the spleen, the gallbladder, the kidneys, are like fruits on the inner tree of the body. The limbs and the branches of the tree, that is to say, the structure of the nervous system, is a reticulated structure. But the organs are articulated fruits of that reticulated structure. So when you look at the inside of the human body, you want to understand how these things function. That's adequate. It's adequate to have those two guiding concepts. Finally, we come to metabolism. Well, what is metabolism? Well, metabolism is what happens between, in a twofold way. It's what happens between. It's what happens between reticulation and articulation. And likewise, it's what happens between any plant or creature, human, insect, snake, between that creature and its environment. So you have at any one time two kinds of metabolism going on that sustain your life. One is the metabolism inside your body, say the digestion of your food. The other is the metabolism in which you are a part due to being in her body. So the environment, the natural habitat, nature all around you is like her body. And you are in the metabolism of the earth. And the earth will digest you when you reach a certain point where your metabolism is no longer sustained by her attention. And you die. Then the component parts of your body return to the metabolism of the earth, and they are literally eaten and absorbed and recycled. So metabolism is the great recycling of all of the life energies and the life processes shared by the creatures in our environment. So what do you see when you look at the Japanese maple in front of you? We said you see the reticulation in the bark and in that which gives the coating or sheathing of that organism, that plant. You see articulation in the shape of the limbs, in the formation of the leaves and the flowers and the fruits. You see metabolism in the interaction between the Japanese maple tree and the earth from which it grows, as well as the atmosphere in which it stands. So just like you and I, the Japanese maple has two types of metabolism, inner and outer. The inner metabolism is the way that it draws nutrients from the soil, the way that it metabolizes, literally, nitrogen, and each plant has its own particular way. Each plant is a chemical factory. It has its own particular way of metabolizing the material elements of the earth. But at the same time, the plant itself is metabolized in the larger alembic of the atmosphere. That is to say, in the laboratory of the atmosphere. And what is the evidence of the atmospheric metabolism of a plant? Well, it's called photosynthesis. And it's absolutely clear from alchemical manuscripts that some people in the Middle Ages who were able to preserve knowledge that had been routinely taught in the mystery schools knew that photosynthesis existed because they had experienced it directly. They had been shown the processes of photosynthesis in ecstatic trance in the mimesis of the organic light. So they knew these things directly. They knew them in a much more intimate and voracious way than science knows them. Well, science approaches them from outside with no involvement in the process. So there you go. You want to understand anything in nature, just look at these three morphological dynamics: reticulation, metabolism, and articulation. Now, let's take that threefold formula, the triple veil of Isis, and apply it to these three hits. Well, obviously, the first one, which happened on February 11th, was about reticulation. With that hit, the Divine Sophia accelerated the reticulation of myelin in all of the human species, and possibly in other creatures as well. I don't know. Other creatures have responded in other ways to this hit of February 11th. I am convinced that one thing we are seeing now more and more frequently in correction is that the other animals on this planet, the non-human species, are reacting to correction as well, and they are turning to us. Somehow they know that we are the chief creatures who are going to monitor correction. We are the chief scientists, as it were, who can follow her correction and contribute something. And the other animals know this. They are being stimulated too. They are awakening to her massive emanations all around the planet. And there are marvelous examples sent to me by crew members, especially recently the one of silverback apes coming into a refuge in Africa. Usually the people go out from the refuge to visit the apes. The apes are tromped, a troop of apes just tromped into the refuge, and they're just sitting there, sitting around looking at the people there, because they say, hey guys, what's going on? Hey, human creatures. Hey, our two-legged friends. Here we are, your four-legged friends and your creepy serpentine friends and your avian friends. What on earth is going on? You know, you're on the front line, you tell us. So the stimulation that is that she's applying through her first attention could be manifesting in this way. And it's remarkable, the reports that I have every week of people doing the Gayan Tantric Vow finding that the moment they do it, there are connections with animals that immediately occur. Birds, often white birds, immediately come and seek them out. I mean, this is the proof that this practice is not an exercise in magical thinking. Far from it. So the effect of the first hit was to escalate and accelerate the reticulation process. It follows then, consistent with this paradigm, that the paradigm of the new biology, the March 10th hit coming up in a few days would be delivered to the process of metabolism, because that is the womb, the virgin womb. It's not only the place of metabolism of the stomach, of the place where we metabolize food, but in a deeper sense, I think this can be interpreted as the metabolism of the womb itself, hence the virgin womb of mutation. And finally, the third hit on April 7th might be expected to impact articulation. That's something to look forward to indeed. These are massive events happening on the planetary scale, which each and every one of you can witness, each and every one of you can verify for yourself if these events are actually happening and how they are happening. So I would expect, looking forward to March 10th, that the planetary animal mother is directing a massive hit upon the zone of metabolism. Now, what is that going to mean? I really don't know. I mean, we'll be there in real time together and we'll find out. But I can give you certain intimations for what they're worth. And with these brief intimations, I will conclude this talk. You know, something you hear a lot about in discussions of entheogens and sacred plants is the neurochemistry of these plants. Of course, this is a great study to be understood. And we know that Gaia Sophia has provided us with a particular set of plants of the millions of plant species. There are only some hundred who have these properties, which is that they are psychomimetic and cerebromimetic, and so that the actions of the plants upon our system when ingested simply repeat or mimic functions that are already in our system, and that way they enhance and amplify those functions. And there's an awful lot of talk about DMT. I've pointed out that DMT is the chemical reciprocate to metanoia. There's far less talk about an equally important three-letter chemical, ATP, or adenosine triphosphate. Adenosine triphosphate really qualifies as the chemical of life, if you will, because it is the chemical that is produced through the action of the ribosomes of a cell in order to sustain life. ATP is sort of like the battery is to a human cell, a living cell, like the charge of a battery is to the battery, you know? So if you take a regular flashlight battery and compare it to a cell in your body, that battery has a charge in it as long as it's still operating. As long as it's not a dead battery, it has a charge in it, so you can insert it into a flashlight and the light will come on. Likewise, each cell has a charge in it. What is that charge? It is the continuous production and reproduction of ATP. So the divine alchemy of the womb is the reproduction of ATP. It's not the reproduction of physical beings. It's not biological reproduction of progeny. That, as we're beginning to learn, is in fact not what the Aeon Sophia intended for our species. So when I use the trigger word reproduction, let's see if we can drop back and look at that word in a new way. We might want to think about reproduction of our species through mitotic sexual congress. We'll have to talk about this subject and get it straightened out. But let's drop back and look more deeply into what is reproduction. Reproduction is the continuous recycling of ATP out of the ribosomes of a cell. And this process is the divine metabolism that sustains our organic existence as living creatures. And Reich knew a lot about this, and he also knew that this process of mitochondriac radiation is connected with other kinds of luminal radiation known as mitogenic radiation. Now, this was discovered by the Russian scientist Gerwitz in the 1930s. And as a matter of fact, if you go read The Function of the Orgasm, you will find in the chapter entitled entitled The Orgasm Formula, that Reich says that in the egg cell, Reich talks a lot about, by the way, about invagination or the forming of bladders. He uses this term bladder a lot. And he describes how life can only exist if the pure, formless plasm of life is surrounded by a cell. Without the cellular membrane, life cannot exist. Well, this again is reticulation. The membrane of a cell is a reticulated surface. It happens to be a porous surface and a transparent surface, but it is still reticulated. So the primary reticulation is the formation of cell membranes. And Reich knew this and understood it in great details. And he explains how the growth of an egg cell is due to taking up a fluid due to the fact that a cell, because it is enclosed by a membrane or invaginated, can hold fluid. But at the same time, fluid can pass through the porous membrane of the cell, and that involves electrical charge and discharge. It also involves luminous or luminal charge and discharge. So Reich observed, the nucleus begins to radiate to produce energy. This is ATP produced by the ribosomes. Gerwich termed this phenomenon mitogenic radiation. So intimately connected with the divine alchemy of the womb, the virgin womb, is A, the production and recycling of ATP in the ribosomes. B, mitogenic radiation. And C, the electrical charges and discharges across the cell membrane, which is a porous reticulated surface. And these electrical charges and discharges across the cell membrane account for the sum total of your emotions, or the homeostasis of your emotional body. The emotional body, the way you feel about being in a body, the way you feel, your mood this day, your mood right now, is the summation of the electrical charges across the membrane of your cells. Now, bear these pictures in mind, bear these descriptions in mind, and carry them with you to the March 10th event as we anticipate this perigee hit. Bear in mind also that what I mean by virgin womb is something you can now fully understand. Obviously, the womb of woman, as we know woman today, the womb of the female of our species, is not a virgin womb. That is because it is capable of producing progeny. Even if it doesn't produce progeny, it's not a virgin womb, because it is an invaginated space designed for the human fetus to grow in. The virgin womb is the ribosome. The virgin womb is that deeper part of the human metabolism that reproduces the energy of life rather than the creaturely form of our species. I strongly anticipate that the mutation of divine alchemy intended by Sophia on March 10th is due to impact this process in the virgin womb. How? I cannot say. It is something that happens in real time. You have to be there to know. And this being the case, we can anticipate that there would be a ritual by which we could observe this act of divine alchemy. The carnal embrace is the ritual in which we observe her strike upon the myelin sheath and her acceleration of the reticulation of myelin. There could then be a corresponding ritual to observe her strike upon our metabolism. And finally, thirdly, a ritual corresponding to her strike upon our articulation. I associate the knees of the Virgin with articulation because that is the part of the torso that uniquely moves and allows us to move around the earth. It is the articulation of our lower limbs. Three rituals for three moments of divine alchemy. This is the fantastic prospect in the spring of the year 2012 for those who follow the course of Sophia's correction. So thank you for your time and attention, and I'll be talking to you again soon. This is your Nav signing off and wishing safe passage to each and all.